Today's shiur in Masechet Baba Kama Daf Tes. We will begin Be'ezer Hashem Yisbarach on Daf Ches Amud Beis, all the way at the bottom of the Amud, two lines from the bottom. Amar Abaye, Ruvain Shemacha Sodna L'Shimon Shloi B'Achrayas. Ruvain sold a field to Shimon without Achrayas. Without Achrayas means that if people to whom Ruvain owes money come and exercise a lien that there is on this property, so then the halacha will be that Shimon has no recourse back to Reuven. It says the Gemara Achla Yechzabah, before Shimon could actually do a kinyan chazaka on this field, the Yotzla Sikin Achla Yechzabah, and there were complaints about this field. People came and claimed that this field that Reuven sold to Shimon doesn't actually belong to Reuven, and he had no right to sell it. Some claim that that Reuven stole the field from me, and he therefore had no right to sell it. Others say that there were prior other Rishonim claim that the issue here is that there was already mortgages that were ready to be exercised on this field, and therefore he had no right to sell the field. So Shimon wants to back out of this transaction because he knows that the chances of him being able to back out of this transaction, if the mortgage that there is on this field is exercised, as we learned at the beginning of our shiur now, he won't have recourse. So the halacha is, once he already took ownership of the field, the halacha is en yachal lachzba, it's too late for him to back out. My tama, why is that the halacha? Damale, because the seller, Reuven, could tell Shimon, chayse de katri sarvis v'kibalt, you bought a bag full of gnats. In other words, it was your bad fortune that you bought this property, and now you can't back out anymore. So Meimus have a chazaka. Says the Gemara, at what point is it considered that it's a chazaka, that it's too late for him to back out? Says the Gemara, Michidayish a mitzri. As soon as he did something along the borders of the field, that shows ownership. So the way Rashi seems to learn the Gemara is that since he did not do a kinyan, so it's not his. And therefore, since he didn't actually do a kinyan, the halacha is he could back out. And we'll have to explain that according to Rashi, it's going to be that even though he didn't consummate the deal, but he agreed to do it. And normally once you agree to a deal, you have to keep the deal. Here, because of the unique circumstances, he doesn't have to. Tysus has a different approach. Tysus says that even if a kinyan was already done, but as long as he did not do this kinyan chazaka, which shows ownership of the field, he has a right to back out. A third opinion that I saw in the Rishonim is referring to a situation where there was a kinyan with a shtar. And since there was only a kinyan shtar, a chazaka, when you buy a field, a kinyan shtar alone is inadequate. You also have to have a kinyan chazaka. And therefore, what the Gemara is teaching us is that till the kinyan chazaka was done, then the halacha is that he could back out. So Rashi explained that Da'ish HaMitzri means that he did something actually to the borders of the field. There are, however, that say, Tysha seems to learn, that you don't have to actually do something physical in the field that it should be considered kinyan chazaka. According to Tysus, as long as he walked around the borders, and the point being that since he walked around the borders, it shows ownership in the field. And once he walked around the borders and he showed that act of ownership in the field, that till then, the Gemara is saying he has the right to back out. Says the Gemara, this entire discussion, suggests the Gemara, is Dafke Shloi B'Achrayas. When Shimon bought the property And he bought it under the condition that if it would be taken away from him, he has no, as we learned, he has no recourse back to the seller. But in a case, b'achrayis, it was sold with achrayis, loy. He says the Gemara, then the halacha, says the Gemara, he doesn't, he could always give it back, because he said that's what I meant with buying it with achrayis, that I shouldn't have any of these headaches. V'kedamri, afil b'achrayis nami. Even if he bought it by achrayis, so his strength to walk away from this transaction is much stronger. The halacha is that he entered into a transaction, and he said he's going to buy this field. Once he entered into a transaction, and he said he's going to buy the field, he has to honor his commitment. What the seller tells him is, achvi tirchav, when you'll be able to show that you lost the field because it was taken away from you, then indeed, ashalm lach, I will pay you back. And I'll have to pay you back for what you bought the field from me and you lost it. But until then, I don't have to, you have to honor the deal. And the way Rashi explains the Gemara is, right now you bought the field, and a deal is a deal. So since you bought the field and the deal is a deal, then the halacha is you have to honor your deal and pay me what you owe me. When you'll be able to prove that the field was taken away from you, I'll take it back from you. And I'll give you your money or whatever. Rashi continues to say, what he also is essentially saying to him is that just because somebody entered a complaint about this field, it doesn't mean that he's going to necessarily win the Dentira. And since he doesn't necessarily going to win the Dentira, so I don't have to be held responsible until you actually lose the field, and then I have to pay you back. The Gemara on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph had asked a question. That on one hand, the Torah Kedoshah says, Meitav Sadeo, Meitav Karmi Yishalim, that when you have to pay, you have to pay with the best of your assets. And then the Gemara had asked, but the Pasuk says, Balabar Yishalim Kesev Yoshev Lebalov. And from Yoshev we learned that a filu subin, a mazik, could pay back what he owes, even with the most inferior property. And the question was, how do we reconcile these two psukim? So Rav Huna Amar, Rav Huna says that we aren't to understand that this is a question, that this is a problem, because the Torah is giving us an option. He could give him kesef, or meitav. What the Torah is saying is that he could give either or. And the way Rashi understands the Gemara is that first the Gemara asked this question, then the Gemara brought up the machlokes of Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Kiva when we speak about meitav, ben the mazik sheminin or ben the nizik sheminin, which opened up the entire shir that we particularly had in our previous shir about what do you do when you only have idyas or beninus or zaburius, what is done. And then, now the Gemara is coming back to explain, come back to the original question of this sugya. Taisus has a different approach. Taisus is saying that Rav Huna is not necessarily coming to answer the question that we just mentioned. But rather, says Taisus, Rav Huna is coming to explain the Mishnah. The Mishnah said that you pay mimetav, shchayv hamazik l'shalom, mimetav ha'aretz. So if we would learn the Mishnah simply, it would seem to indicate that a mazik always has to pay with property. And not only must he pay with property, but actually he has to pay with meitav aretz. He has to pay with the idyas. Comes Rav Huna to explain our Mishnah that isn't necessarily the case. And he also has a right to pay with kesef. Esrei asked the Gemara Esrei of Nachman Rav Huna, the Brisa said, Yabalav bo yisham kesef, Yoshev labalav. And Yoshev, we said, comes to teach us, a rabbis, Shava kesef, that you don't have to pay cash. You could pay a filo subin, very poor quality brand. And why are you saying that you have to pay kesef or meitav? Answers the Gemara. That brisa is referring to individual He doesn't have cash available. Since he doesn't have cash available, that's when he pays subin. Either Leslie, ask the Gemara, if that price is referring to a situation where the person doesn't have cash, pshita, that he only has to pay, he can only pay with what he has, answers the Gemara. Matatei mamrinalei, we tell him, zil terach savin vaisalei kesef, go sell whatever assets you have, and you should have the obligation of bringing cash, kamashman, that he's not obligated to do so, and if he whatever he has and has the ability to pay with, that's all the halacha mandates that he do. Omer of Asi, ksofim harei kikarka. So Rasi makes a statement. The cash is equal to real estate. Ask the Gemara, what did Rav Asi mean to say with this? Ilema linya meitav, that real estate is equivalent to cash, that a mazik pays either real estate or cash, says the Gemara, that's what we just started the sugya. Hayand Rav Huna. Rav Huna said, I kesev, I meitav. And the Gemara therefore is asking, if Rav Asi means to say that he is agreeing with Rav Huna, so the Gemara should have said, v'chein omer Rav Asi. Rav Asi says the same as Rav Huna. Says the Gemara, no. What Rav Asi is referring to the following situation. Shnei achim shecholku, the father passed away, left over two sons, and the two sons are dividing the estate of the father. V'natal echad karka, one of the sons took property, v'chek sofim, and one took cash. Ubok b'alchoiv, and that b'alchoiv came, v'natal karka. He took the property in payment of the debt, because the halacha is that when a b'alchoiv comes to collect monies owed to him, he only has the right, not from the person who owes it, but from the Yarshim, a Balchoyv could only collect from Karka. So now what happened is, because the way the two brothers divided the estate, one brother ended up paying the entire debt, Dazelhai, and so the brother who had to give away the real estate goes, he could take cash, half the amount that he had to pay out, he'll take cash from the brother that took the cash. Ask the Gemara, Pshita, what is Rav Asi coming to teach us? Hai bro, v'hai la bro, is one son more than the other son? They're both equal sons. They both equally carry the obligation. And since they both carry the obligation, why should one son be any less obligated to than the other son? So Tosfos asks, why is this so simple to the Gemara? The halacha is, the Gemara is going to teach us that if the two brothers divided property and the Baal Chayv took from one, they both took property, and one brother is the one that ended up paying, he has no recourse to his other brother. So why over here is it so simple? So explains Tosfos, and we really learned the Gemara this way. There's a difference between one brother and when both brothers got property. When both brothers got property, their halach is that the brother who ends up having to pay the loan, the other brother is the one that loses out. But here, the way it was divided was that they both deserved everything. And since they both deserved everything, they both deserved to get karka. And he gave up his rights in the karka to his brother who deserves to get cash. So certainly he deserved to get that property. And since he deserved to get that property, the halacha is he shouldn't have to take the loss himself. Ikadamri, one, but then there's an opinion that says just the opposite. The brother who took cash said, I was careful to take cash because the reason I did so, dignity, that if they will be collected, I won't have any responsibility. And that's why you took property. The mitzvah for lemishtalach medimini. You knew that you have no right to collect from me. That's the type of arrangement we made. Elo. So if that's the case, what is we're back to where we started. What is the case? What does Rav Asi keep calling to teach us? Says the Gemara. Elo. L'shnei achim shechalku. If two brothers divided all the property that the father gave them, left them, died. And as we just spoke about this case, he took all of his obligation from the property of one of the brothers. And at that point, says Rav Asi, that you can't take, that the other brother could come and say, I didn't have to carry this loan myself. You have to participate. And to this, Rav Asi says, the brother who reimburses the brother doesn't have to give him property to reimburse him. He could give him cash, says the Gemara. If that's what Rav Asi meant to teach us here, ask the Gemara, V'amar Rav Asi, Chada Zimna. Rav Asi already taught us this halacha. Ditma achas shechalku, a brother's divided up the real estate that the father left. Uba b'alchoiv, v'not l'chelka shechamhem. And the person that the father owed money to comes to collect a share. Rav Amar, Rav's opinion is batel machlokes, that the entire original division that they made is null and void. And the halach is we start all over again. Shmuel Amar Viter, the person who lost the property, and the other brother can't make any claim to him. Rav Asi Amar, Rav Asi's opinion in Oitla Raviv, Karak Raviv, and Mos. We're not the way Rashi learns the Gemara. He's entitled to half, but he's going to get that half. A half will be given to him in Karaka, and a half will be given to him in cash. There is a different pshat that we're not sure if he has to give up, so he doesn't give back half of what he gave away. He only has to give away a quarter. Rav Asi Omar, and the Gemara explains the machloikus. Rav Asi batel machloikus, that the whole division that they made originally is null and void. Ksava, achim shacholkin kiyarshin havo. The question here is, how does the halacha view when brothers divide the estate of a father? If we say kiyarshin, it's another way of saying yesh breira. Yesh breira means that when they divide up the estate and one brother takes whatever he takes and the other brother takes whatever he takes, it was always theirs from the first place. It was theirs. It was their Yerusha. And the part that I took was mine all along. And the part that my brother took was always his. But what is my relationship to the property? My relationship to this property is the relationship of a Yerush. And since my relationship is as a Yerush, so the pshat that I always like to explain with is that a Yerush is bra karadavua. A Yerush is really just an extension of his father. And since a Yerush is really just, according to the halacha, a extension of the father, so the father obviously owed this money, and now the brothers are paying the money. The two brothers, who, as we just explained, are extension of the father, carry that obligation equally. And therefore, one brother shouldn't have to carry any more of the load than the other. Shmuel's opinion was that viter. Because Shmuel's opinion is, achim shecholku kelkuchas. When two brothers make a division of the assets, what they're really doing, this goes back to ein breira. Not that we say that it was really never this from the first place. Everybody owned everything. That's how the halacha looks at the situation of somebody passing away and his children inheriting him. Everybody owns everything. And then these two brothers did a business deal and they traded. I'll give away some of mine to get some of yours, etc. So therefore, not only are they not considered an extension of the father, and not only are they not considered as Yarshim, they're just considered like people who did a business deal. But it's even much deeper than that.
Because as we began the shiur today, we began the shiur today by discussing that when you buy something, you could buy with a chrayis, or you could buy not with a chrayis. A chrayis means that if it's taken away from you, you have recourse. Shloi b'achrayis means that you don't have recourse if it's taken away. So the Gemara is saying that the halacha looks at this as not only as if they did a business deal with each other, but they did a business deal with each other with at recourse. And therefore the brother who ended up losing assets to pay off the Baal Chayv of their father has nowhere to go. Rav Asi's opinion, as we learned, was Noit L'Rvi B'Karka R'Rvi B'Mos, the Mesapkele, because he's not quite certain. How do we view the relationship between the brothers? Hilkach Noitel R'Rvi B'Karka R'Rvi B'Mos. So the way Rashi learns the Gemara, what Rav Asi is saying is, because we're not sure how to view it, if we look at them as Yorshim, then he should have to pay back half. If we look at them as Lekuchas, then he shouldn't have to pay back. So the halacha is, he pays back only a quarter. Mamon amutl b'safik, it's money that is, we're not quite sure how to treat this money, so we treat it that way. And the halacha is, oy b'kesef, oy b'karka, he could pay his brother back either with cash or with real estate. Says the Gemara, if that's what he meant, so what, that and that's, says the Gemara, is what Rav Asi meant to teach us. Says the Gemara, if that's the case, El Maya Rein Kekarka. What was meant when Rav Asi made the statement that a Pom Marein Kekarka, says the Gemara, Linyan Meitiv, that the halacha is that the mazik could pay with cash, doesn't have to pay only with property that's ijus. Says the Gemara, so that's what we originally said Rav Asi meant. And when we said that, we asked Yochi Hanad Rav Huna. So Rav Asi is really saying the exact same thing as Rav Huna. So why didn't the Gemara say V'chein Omer Rav Asi? Says the Gemara, Ema, indeed, when we start learning what Rav Asi said, the right gears is V'chein Omer Rav Asi. So the Gemara now quotes another halacha of Rav Huna. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Zeira, Amar Rav Huna, the mitzvah, when somebody has to fulfill a mitzvah, the halacha is he has to give away atshlish, a third of his money. Ask the Gemara, my shlish, what does that mean? Ilema shlish beisai, that you have to give away a third of all of your assets. So Elamata, ask the Gemara, if that's going to be the case, Yisram le tlosa mitzvasa, if somebody has three mitzvahs that he has to do, then he'll be left with nothing, because each mitzvah he has to give away a third. Says the Gemara, so and the Gemara is assuming that it's certain that the halacha is that, as Taisha says, that the halacha is they're not obligated to spend more than 20% of for your mitzvah. So that can't be that's what is meant. And that indeed is a question. How the Gemara says, "I'm a vazbez, al yivazbez yoyse mechaymish." The question that is said in Masechta Ksuba Staff Nun Amar Aleph regarding tztaka. The question is, when Chazal teach us, "I'm a vazbez, al yivazbez yoyse mechaymish," is that halacha in tztaka, or is that halacha everywhere else? So the Bi'ah halacha says that we can make an argument that tztaka and a mitzvah are not the same. And especially if it's a mitzvah that you can't fulfill on another time. And then on the other hand, you could make this argument that tztaka, if the person who's here, who needs the tztaka, is standing here, how could I push him off and say, well, I don't have to give more than that? So because of that, it seems that the opinion of all the Paiskim is that both for tztaka and both for mitzvahs, the halacha is that you don't have to spend more than 20%. Given that background, however, the halacha is that everything we said now is a mitzvah. So there are limits how much you're supposed to spend for a mitzvah, how much you're supposed to spend for tzedakah. But what about an aveira? When it comes to an aveira, the halacha is that you have to spend whatever you have in order to avoid not doing an aveira. Furthermore, there's a beautiful psak from Ramosha. There's a beautiful tshuva for Ramosha. Ramosha, the tshuva says, so what would be the halacha, and we discussed this already once, what would be the halacha if somebody has to do a pidyon haben? And the pidyon haben, we know, is chamis shloim. And the chamis shloim is more than 20% of what he has. So what's the halacha? Does he have to spend, does he have to not do a pidyon haben? Or will he still have to do the pidyon haben? So Ramosha writes in the Tshuvas that the entire discussion that we're having in our Gemara is only by a mitzvah where the Torah doesn't give in a set amount of how much you have to spend. There is no set amount in the Torah how much you have to spend on a mitzvah. There is no set amount in the Torah how much you have to spend for tzedakah. So now we have these rules. But when the Torah sets forth a specific number, how much the mitzvah is supposed to cost, that's not what we're speaking about. Eller Rav Zeira, says Rav Zeira, what Rav Huna meant to say was, hid the mitzvah. You're supposed to, the Torah says, ze keli vanveyu. You have to beautify your mitzvah. And the question is, how much do you have to spend for hid the mitzvah? Machloikis rishonim, if hid the mitzvah is a deraisa, or hid the mitzvah is a drabonon, the opinion of the Rosh is that hid the mitzvah is the rabbanon. The opinion of the Yamsha Shloim is that hid the mitzvah is the raisa. And says the Gemara, you have to spend shlish b'mitzvah. You have to spend a third more for the shlish b'mitzvah for a hid the mitzvah. By Rav Ashi, when we measure the shlish milgav, that means if you start with $6. A shlish is the way we normally count it. A third of six is two. A shish mavar, that we take the third on top of what we start, and that's how we measure the third. So it would be six plus three, which would equal nine, and three is a third of nine. So the nafkamina would be, if you start with six, do you have to spend $2 or $3? Teiku. Says the Gemara, the Marava and Etzisrael Amri Mishmed Reb Zeira, they said him as a sort of the name of Rav Zeira, Achlish Mishaloi. The third that you give is from your own money. A person is obligated to take a third from his own money. However, Mikan Ve'elich, if somebody takes more than a third, Mishal Kadosh Baruch Hu, you could be confident that a Kadosh Baruch Hu will pay you back. That's one Peshat in the Gemara. Another Peshat, Mishal Kadosh Baruch Hu, is that a mitzvah that we're obligated to fulfill, we're not allowed to use Maisa money for, you're not allowed to use Maisa money for tzedakah, but if that's up to the, for the mitzvah, that's for the mitzvah. And that, as we're learning now, is even for the hidden mitzvah, because as we're learning now, hidden mitzvah is a part of the mitzvah. What the Gemara is teaching us is that if you're spending more than a shlish for hidden mitzvah, you're allowed to use tzedakah money. So we learned the Gemara like Rashi. The way we're learning the Gemara like Rashi is that if somebody is buying an esrig and he has two esrogim, he has to spend up to a third more to buy a nicer esrig. The Tosfos Yontif, Magen Avraham, however, say that why are we not concerned for that we have to be worried that you'll always could find a nicer esrig. So the Tosfos Yontif says that what the halacha requires is that when you go to the store to buy an esrig, and there are two esrogim available, and one is nicer than the other, the halacha is that you should spend up to a third more for the nicest esrig. But not that you're obligated in any way to start going from store to store to look for a nice esrig. That's not something that the halacha in any way requires. The Gemara taught us that we have to be ready to spend up to a third more for mitzvah. There's a very interesting vart that I saw. The Gemara says that gol ha-ma'asa yosem and oisa, that somebody that encourages other people to do mitzvahs, it's even more significant than the person himself who does the mitzvah. They saw that the Sefer Likutei Bas Likutei says that the word hamasa stands for hidda mitzvah at shlisha mitzvah, that you spend up to a third for hidda mitzvah. So Rashi says that what is the example of a hidda mitzvah? A seilecha talisno tzitzisno. So we understand, as the Kozlik of Arov and the Shalos Tshuvos Eretz Tzvi, that the tzitzis are the mitzvah. And the Gemara, as we're learning now, Zeh Keli Vinveyu, it's now the fun of a mitzvah, that you have to do a hidden mitzvah. But so that means you have to buy nicer tzitzis. What about the talis? So it says the Eretz Tzvi, that since you can't fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis without a talis, so what happens now is that the talis becomes part of the mitzvah. And he says that's why one of the reasons we have to show so much respect for our wives. He says, because we all have the obligation of pruravu, the mitzvah pruravu, and obviously one cannot fulfill the mitzvah pruravu without a wife, so our wife becomes part of the mitzvah. And therefore, the halacha is that we have to pay, be ready to pay up, to do hidda mitzvah and treat our wives with so much respect. The Majid Zareba, in explaining this Gemara, says that the rule is, as we've learned in Masechta Gedushin, that schar mitzvah hay alma mleka. People don't get schar in this world for the mitzvahs. Hayom lasoysom umocha lekabel scharam. And the simple explanation is because a mitzvah is of infinite value. And since a mitzvah is of infinite value, the schar for the mitzvah has to be given in something which is infinite, which is olam haba. Olam haza, by definition, is limited, and therefore in this world we can't get schar. Says the Majid Rebbe that in this world we don't get schar for the mitzvah, but for the hidden mitzvah, for something that we weren't necessarily obligated to do, that we have to, for that we get schar. And as we just said, that from the Kozlik of Rav, that everything is included in hidda mitzvah. Hidda mitzvah includes whatever is part of the fulfillment of the mitzvah. Since hidda mitzvah includes whatever is a part of doing the mitzvah, therefore the halacha is, says the Majid, somebody buys new clothing to nice clothing in order to daven in, that's included in hidda mitzvah. Where do we get to the number of a shlish? So one pshat that I saw, the Ben Yoyada suggests, that often the Gemara speaks about when you fill something up, you could a cup, you're buying something, if buying a cup full of something, you could fill it up with a midah gedusha or midah mechuka. A midah mechuka is exactly the size of the cup. A midah gedusha is overfilling. What is the difference in quantify difference between a midah gedusha and a midah mechuka? A third. And the lesson here is that we're supposed to spend up to a third. We're supposed to do a mitzvah. We're supposed to do a mitzvah, the midah gedusha, in a very nice way, in a way that we want to spend as much as we can. The Bnei Yisoschar says that how do we know where in the Torah begins the Bnei Yisoschar? Does the Torah speak about hidda mitzvah? By the Shira, where it says, Zeh Keli Vanveyu, and we learn from that, Hisno Lefonav B'mitzvahs. So he says that the Yerushalmi says that normally when they used to ride with a wagon, they would only have one horse. Paroi was the one that began that there should be two horses. when Paroi ran after Klal Yisrael by Mitzrayim, he ran by Yamsuf, he ran with three horses. He was so anxious to do what he thought he's supposed to do, chase Klal Yisrael, he took a third more than normal. So just, we're supposed to learn, Midatoy v'merubim midapronius. If Paroi, to do this terrible aveira of chasing Klal Yisrael, was ready to use a third more, we should be ready to spend a third more to do a mitzvah. Along the same line, the Tzvila Tzadik says that Zeh Keli v'Anveyu, that it says by the Shira, is a proof that Kriyas Yamsuf is very connected to Hida Mitzvah. So he explains that the Gemara Masechta Pesachim, Daf Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis, says, B'shor Sha'ol Yisrael Min Hayam, as Klal Yisrael were exiting Yamsuf, they were saying, K'shem Sha'ona Oilam Mitzad Zeh, just like we're exiting from this side, Kach Mitzrayim Oilam Mitzad Echer. The Mitzrayim are exiting from the other side. Amal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sar Shel Yam. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu told the Yam, Pal Oysam Liyabosha, expel the Mitzrayim. Amal Lefanof. So they said, the Yam said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rebbeinu Shel Oilam, Klum Yesh Evich Noisun Lair Abay Matana V'Choyzer V'Moytel B'menu. Is it appropriate that you gave us a gift and now you take it away from us? I'm going to give you 1.5 time. Says the Gemara, what does that mean? By Paroi it says, Sheish Meis Rechid Bocher. There were 600 chariots that ran after Klal Yisrael. And by Sisroi it says, Teish Meis Rechid Basel, 900 chariots drowned in the sea. 1.5 times, which is Shlish. And therefore, since we see that he's supposed to spend up to we see from Kriyas Yamsuf that you're supposed to give away a third more. And I saw that the Shas HaTshuvos, Shvus Yaakov, even uses this formula that when a dayan has a dentira, when a dayan has a dentira, he should, and he needs to make a pshara, then the halacha is he should use the formula of a third. Because that's the hidda mitzvah. He's trying to make peace, and making peace, of course, is the biggest hidda mitzvah, and therefore the person should be ready to spend up to a third. There's an interesting tshuva also in the Shas HaTshuvos Shvus Yaakov, Chelek Aleph Simen Lamed. We know that the halacha on Chanukah is that it's preferable to use olive oil over candles. But if you don't have olive oil, you use candles. What would be the halacha if somebody didn't have olive oil? So he started to prepare his menorah. He started to prepare his menorah with candles. And then, before he actually lit the menorah, they brought him olive oil. So the Shvus Yaakov says, once you already began the mitzvah, as much as hidden mitzvah is important, and as we're learning here, olive oil is preferable over candles. Once you started using candles, you don't have to change that. However, the Chacham Tzvi disagrees. He says that just preparing the menorah is not considered that you started doing the mitzvah. And therefore, the halacha is you could take the candles to the side and use olive oil. The question here is, however, if somebody took out a Sefer Torah, but they haven't begun to read from the second Sefer Torah, and then there's a nicer Sefer Torah, could they switch? So many Paiskim say that in this case, it's different. Because if you're going to put back the first Sefer Torah, it shows a begam in the Sefer Torah. It shows as if there's something wrong with the Sefer Torah. And very often in halacha, the halacha teaches us that it's better that we're worried about gomish Sefer Torah, that people will say not nice things about the Sefer Torah, and because of that, the Paiskim suggest that you should use the first Sefer Torah, even though the second Sefer Torah is nicer. There's an interesting machloikas of Paiskim. One of the examples that we're speaking about here is here the is an esrig. And the Paiskim discuss a situation where a person has limited means or whatever the situation is, and there's only that much he could afford to spend on an esrig. And his friend has a much nicer esrig. What is better to use? Should I use the esrig which I spent my own money on, that even though it's not as nice, or should I use the esrig that doesn't belong to me? Of course, I'll get it with a matana manas lahachzer, but it's a nice esrig. The Shas HaTshuvos Torah Lishma says that it's preferable to use the esrig that I spent my own money on, even though it's not as nice. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says no, that you should always try to use the nicer esrig, which interestingly enough has also repercussions. I saw that the Keshuki Chemin has a discussion where somebody could choose to buy one of two esrogim. One is an esrog that grew in Eretz Yisrael, but it's not as nice. And the other one is an esrog that grew in Eretz Yisrael, but the esrog that grew in Eretz Yisrael is not as nice, and the esrog that grew in Chutz Laaretz is nicer. What is better? So he goes into a whole long discussion, and his bottom line is that you should use the Eretz Yisrael, the esrog. One point that he makes is that the esrog of Eretz Yisrael was already used for a mitzvah. The esrog of Eretz Yisrael was used for the mitzvah yishuv Eretz Yisrael. It was already used to work Eretz Yisrael. And since we see that it was done one mitzvah, there's a concept whenever we speak about mitzvahs, we should hoil this avdabah mitzvah chada, that once something was used for one mitzvah, it should be used for another mitzvah. He also quotes a tshuva from Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld Zatzal, Simen Gimel, the Shalos Tshuvas Silmas Chaim. Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld suggests that just like we find by Hilchas Brachas, so he says when we speak about Hilchas Brachas, the halach is when you have a number of fruits, a number of foods in front of you, and the halacha discusses extensively in Hilchas Brachas which food do you make a bracha on first and which not. So, says Rabbi Yosef Chaim, that there are many different details to that halacha, but one is that if one of the foods, one of the fruits is min sheva, is a fruit from the Zayim Minim that grow in Eretz Yisrael, that always takes precedence. Why? So Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld explains, because the point behind this is the shvach of Eretz Yisrael. So if you have a fruit that's from one of the minim that Eretz Yisrael was blessed with, that and Eretz Yisrael, we want to show the chshivas of Eretz Yisrael, so we always make a bracha on the Zayim minim first. Says Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, that same concept should be applied to the esrig. That since that's what this fruit grew, this esrog grew in Eretz Yisrael, that's why we should show it precedence. The Shalos HaTshuvos B'Tzel HaChochma, however, Chela Gimel Simen Samaches, is not convinced, because he says we just finished learning in our Gemara the concept of hid mitzvah, that we're supposed to try to do the mitzvah in the nicest way possible, and using the nicest esrig is the greatest hid mitzvah, no matter where it grew. Says the Mishnah, Kol shechavti b'shmirasoi, anything that I am obligated to watch, if I didn't do what I was supposed to, hechsharti es niskoi, I prepared that it should do damage. Hechsharti mikzas nasoi, if I didn't watch it properly, I watched it but not properly, chavti b'tishum nasoi, hechshakol niskoi. Even if I only didn't do the job, I did some watching, but not as all as I should have, I'm obligated to pay for the damages. Says the Mishnah, Nech Chosim, if my property did damage to Nechosim She'en B'Mila, another way of saying something which is not Hegdish, then I will be held responsible. But if it belongs to Hegdish, as we've learned previously, you will not be held responsible. Of a damages hazgdish. Nechas m'shein bein bris, the same halach is that these rules apply when it did damage to Jewish owned property. Nechasim hamichadim, if it did damage to something that's owned by somebody, if my property did did damage to something which is hefker, the halacha is very different. And when my property did damage to something else, chutz merishus hamiyuchedes lamazik. That's only if it did damage somewhere that isn't my area. But if it's somewhere that belongs to me, so that I could say to the victim, why was your property and my property that should get damaged? Rishus hanizik v'mazik. And if we have an area that belongs to both of us, then the halacha will discuss, we'll learn in the Gemara, Mitzvah Daf Yud Gimel, what will be the halacha. Shechizik, when my property does damage to somebody else's property, chava mazik l'shalim, teshlumei nezek, the mate of Eretz Halacha that we've learned many times. So Gemara begins to explain the Mishnah. Tanur Rabbanan, the Braisa taught us, kol shechavti b'shmerasai, if I didn't watch something property, hechsharti esniskai, I created an environment where damage could take place, and therefore I will be held responsible. Explains the Gemara, Ketzad, explains the Braisa, what does that mean? Shor ubar, shemos m'lcher shayt v'katan, if I gave over my animal or my bar to a cher shayt v'katan, people who the halacha considers incapable of having das to do what has to be done, for ziku, and then the shor or bar do damage, chayv l'shalim, I will be held responsible, mash enkem be'esh. If I give over fire to cher shayt v'katan, I won't be held responsible. So ask the Gemara, let's understand, what does the Braisa mean? But my askinan, if I gave over an animal that was properly tied up, a pit that was properly covered, to somebody who doesn't have the capability of watching them properly, so if I gave over a coal to chereshayt v'katan, is the same case. Mashna hocha or mashna hocha. Why by shorubar would I be chayiv? And why by eish am I potter? Ella, shor mutter. I gave him an untied axe. Ubar magula, and I gave him an open pit. So ask the Gemara, the Kavasa, if that's the case, gabe eish, what would be the comparable case by eish? Shall have us. That I gave a real fire to chereshayt v'katan. Says the Gemara, Mash enkin be'esh to potter. We just learned the Braisa says that if I gave eish to chereshayt v'katan, I'll be potter. But ask the Gemara, we're going to learn in Mitzvah Shem on that nun tesam beis. V'amar eshlok shmei dechizki loy shanu, that if somebody sends a fire with a chereshayt v'katan, that he's not going to be chayiv el kshemos legecheles, because I only gave him a coal. A coal itself is not fire. And since a coal by itself is not fire, then the chereshayt v'katan are the ones that make the coal into the fire. So I'm no more, as we're going to learn, than a grama ben zaken. I didn't do damage directly. Avos shalheves chayiv. So avos shalheves chayiv. My tama dabari hazeka. If I give a real fire to a chereshayt v'katan, of course I'll be held responsible. So what is the Braisa mean? It says, "Well, Olam, I gave him a shor kosher bar mechusa. The kavasah gab eish, I gave him a coal. Then we ask the question, mashnahocha, why if I gave a properly protected animal or bar to a child, to a chereshayt v'katan, and they end up doing damage, I'm held responsible. And why by the fire is it any different? Answers the Gemara, shor dakel and tukei. The animal is always trying to get itself out of the being tied together. And I should have known that that's a real possibility. Bar, a covered pit, is common, daklan turi, that one way or another, the cover will come off. Gecheles, but by coal, it's actually just the opposite. Gecheles, kam de shavaklei, normally what happens with a coal, ma'amya amni v'azle, it fades out. So therefore, if what happened was that just the opposite happened, I'm not going to be held responsible. Says the Gemara, Ul Rabbi Yochanan Omer. But according to Rabbi Yochanan's opinion, that I feel a muscle, I shall have a snami potter, that even if I gave an actual fire to Cheresh Shait V'Katam, I will be potter. The Kavasah Hacha, What is the corresponding case to Shalhevis? An untied animal and an open bar. And we come back to our question. Why by the shoru bar that I gave to the Chereshite of a cotton am I held responsible and not by the Eish? Answers Gemara, Hossam, Tzafta the Cheresh Kagorim. If not that the Chereshite of a cotton took this fire, nothing would have happened. Because the fire on its own wouldn't have done damage. Hocha, let's after the Cheresh Kagorim. The Cheresh didn't contribute to the actual Hezek. So there it's the Cheresh who contributed to the Hezek. Since it's the Cheresh who contributed to the Hezek, that's why I'm Potter. I may be a Grum, as we said, but I'm not the actual Mazik. Here, the Shor and the Bar, the Cheresh of cotton, don't make them into Mazikim. They're on their own. So we ignore the Cheresh of cotton, because giving it to the Cheresh of cotton is just doing the wrong thing, and therefore I will be held responsible.